Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thanks for being here with us. Gotta love the Sundays. Why? Because it's wake-up call Sunday. Sunday morning wake-up call here. Albemarle County Schools represented. Dr. Matt Haas here. Superintendent for the second year. You made it!
So far.
So far, anyway, right?
Every day's an interview.
but the contract, right? Don't you? What's the day? July 1st, August 1st?
That's right. So it's, yeah, we in Virginia, it's a four-year contract is the standard. And so each year, though, the board does an addendum to the contract for whatever kind of comp increase or pay increase that I might get. And so in my contract, it says that I would just get what the principals get if I do a good job.
All right. Well, yep. Welcome back.
Thanks, Rick. I love being on your show. Thank you so much for inviting me to come over today. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate that. We also have with us Ms. Cindy Wells, new principal at Cale Elementary School.
Yes. Very excited to be here and to be the principal where my children went to school years ago.
That's impressive. Mm-hmm. You're a parent with your kids at Cale Elementary, and you love it enough and are concerned enough to go through the ranks and take over at the school.
Mm-hmm. My children, former Cale Colts, are now 21 and 16, and my son is actually in Dara School at Albemarle High School.
Cale Colts.
Cale Colts.
I had no idea that was the the Cale Colts.
Absolutely.
Well, welcome to the program.
Happy to be here. Thank you.
We also have with us Mr. Dara Bonham, who is after wandering. Well, I shouldn't say wandering. It makes it sound like you didn't know where you were going. bolting through many schools, many of the high schools here in Albemarle, is now the new principal at Albemarle High School.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me here. I like the word bolting. That makes me feel like it's a planned path, and I'm privileged to be now at Albemarle High School. I started at K-Tech when I first came down here from Northern Virginia, was at Monticello for a few years, assistant principal, just finished 4 years as principal at Western, and now I, too, like Cindy, get to be in the building where I have a child, which is unique and exciting, so I'm glad to be there.
Is it unique and exciting for your child?
I'm not sure. I think we'll figure that out down the road, but certainly for me, from my perspective, it's nice to be in a school community where you live. And it feels like it's a lot of connections that you have that are unique to being in that feeder pattern.
I don't know. If I was a child, I would be like 9 days out of 10 be looking over my shoulder. And then the one day I'd be like, Dad, thank goodness you're here.
Well, she knows where the lunch money is, so that's a good thing.
So our guest today, again, Dr. Matt Haas, the superintendent at Albemarle County Schools, Ms. Cindy Wells, the new principal at Cale Elementary, and Mr. Dara Bonham, the new principal at Albemarle High School. So let's go through and talk about some of the issues and plans for Albemarle County Schools. But I want to start with Dr. Matt Haas. Finishing your first year in the office as superintendent, I'd like to know what surprised you and what you were pleased about and what still needs work. In a quick way with the still what needs work, because I'm sure that falls into what are some of the plans for the upcoming year.
So the other day, a news reporter asked me to sum up the year that I had this year in one word, and it was tough at that time, but about 3 hours later when I was driving home, I realized the word was encouraging, that what surprised me was how much encouragement there is from all the people that I get to work with. The expression, it's lonely at the top, if this is the top, doesn't really apply to me in Albemarle County. I am super impressed and pleased with all of our employees. We have in the ballpark of 2,600 employees. And whether, you know, it goes from the classroom teacher to these fine administrators like the ones I'm here with today, all of our support staff, I knew they were out there in the roles that I've had in the past in the county, but having that firsthand opportunity to really get out to all the schools and look at things through a different lens has really encouraged me a great deal. We do have a world-class school system. We do have work to do, and there will be, there's always going to be challenges. The biggest room in any organization is the room for improvement. So we're always going to have opportunities to get better. But at the same time, I'm really encouraged because I know we have the people that can do it.
Mr. Bonham, what led you to leave Western and go to Albemarle?
Sure. I had a great experience at Western the past four years I served there as principal. You know, the unique thing when you become a building level leader is that the key to the work there is really building relationships. And that starts really across the board, whether it's students. So at the high school level, it's a unique experience as they start getting older and getting ready to graduate off to the real world, obviously with staff and then looking at the community. So I had a wonderful experience and made some really deep relationships with families and my staff. Once I saw the Albemarle position was open, I saw it as a unique opportunity. Again, I came from Fairfax, where I was at a school for 12 years before I came down, and my wife and I actually never thought we'd ever leave Fairfax because we were in a great spot, and I was in a great school about the same size as Albemarle, and it was very similar in a sense that I lived in the community and really felt tied to it. So when Albemarle opened up, it was a chance for me to reflect on the opportunity there to come in. Obviously, a bit of a larger school than Western. All schools present their own challenges, but this was unique for me, I think, to come in for some of my experiences and try something different, but also looking at being able to be maybe have a greater impact within my own community as a citizen as well.
And Ms. Wells, let's talk about what has led you into becoming a principal, because this isn't just your first year at Cale. This is your first year in becoming a principal, correct?
Yes, it is.
I know folks who are quite happy in the administrative level, in remaining teachers, and here you are moving up to becoming a principal. Can you tell me what has led you to that?
Absolutely. I feel like this is the culmination of my educational journey, at least till this point. I started as a teacher in San Antonio, Texas. I went to school in San Antonio because it was a place very close to my heart. It's very close to my roots. My mother was, her first language was Spanish, and so she learned English in school. Because of that experience, I knew I wanted to be a teacher. And after being a teacher for a while, I went to be an assistant principal at another school in San Antonio, and then I became a professional development director for the Core Knowledge Foundation here in Charlottesville. So that's actually, Cale is what brought me to Charlottesville. I wanted my children to go to a diverse school that really cares and wraps around their children, and so 20 years ago, we moved to Charlottesville. We moved to the Cale attendance area. After a few years in professional development, I wanted to get back into the county school system, and so became the Title I coordinator, again, working with reading and math, and then preschool, and took a few journeys again through fine arts. I feel like everything that presents itself as the next step in the journey, and I feel like all those steps, and then becoming the East Island World Languages lead coach for Albemarle Schools for the past 3 years, just really gave me a really close connection to our diverse families here in Charlottesville and the gifts that they bring. And so when the Cale principalship came open, it just felt to me like going home. It's the natural place for me to be. My children went there. I'm very passionate about world languages and biliteracy and bringing all those things together. So I'm really excited to take this next step with a lot of teachers and families that I've had connections with for 20 years.
All right. Again, our guest today, Dr. Matt Haas, who's the superintendent at Albemarle County Schools. We also have with us the new principal of Cale Elementary, Ms. Cindy Wells, and the new principal of Albemarle High School, Mr. Dara Bonham. As far as topics go, I want to get into multiple topics today. One of the first ones is an issue across the state. Albemarle, I believe, is going to be extending the STEP program, correct?
That's correct.
STEP. Can you talk about that?
Sure.
Dr. Haas?
So one of the things we do in our funding request development is we put out an all call to our employees and ask them for ideas for what we could do to improve the school system. One issue that we know, we've known for a long time, but has been demonstrated through research by Dewey Cornell and his staff at UVA, is the ineffectiveness of suspending students, putting them out of school when they misbehave. If a student has trouble reading, we teach them to read. If they have trouble with math, we help them learn math. If they're quote-unquote misbehaving, then it should be our role to help them learn to behave better in school so that they can be more successful. And the other part of that is that the issue of having disparate impact of suspension. So minority students, diverse students of color, students that are more needy tend to be suspended at a greater rate than their white middle-class peers. So that's another area that we need to address. Through that process of the funding request, now retired Principal Catherine Baylor brought forward a program that stood for STEP. I honestly don't remember what the acronym stands for at this point. However, what the program is at the school is that instead of a student being suspended out of school for offenses under which they would typically be suspended, like getting into a fight or an altercation, perhaps disrupting class repeatedly, something like that, the principal offers to the parents that the child would continue to come to school on an abbreviated schedule, come in later in the morning, leave a little earlier, have their work to do at school, but then go through a restorative process, a therapeutic process with a counselor who helps the child begin to understand the impact of their actions and, more importantly, what they can do to not repeat those actions in the future. The parents become a part of it, and when the student returns to the classroom after a few days of this work, then the counselor continues to work with them throughout the year and touch base with them. Catherine Baylor started this program at Jack Jewett, I think, 3 years ago, and the main metric that we were looking at was, would it bring down suspensions, which logically it would because you're not suspending those students out of school. And the parents overwhelmingly always agree they would rather have their child in school and rather have the behavior addressed. And the other part is, would you reduce recidivism? In other words, in the past, if a child gets into a fight or perhaps brings drugs to school or is using alcohol at school, they would get in trouble, and this would happen over and over again. Honestly, I think many times because putting a child out of school when they're unsupervised is somewhat of a reward for misbehaving. And so what we found was it dramatically diminished students returning. I think she had, and don't quote me on the statistics, but I'm pretty sure I remember them because they're pretty stunning. She had 26 incidents throughout that school year where she typically would have suspended a student, where she didn't, and they went through the STEP program. And out of those, 24 of the students did not repeat the behavior, whereas in the past, having dealt with those students in the past, they were repeat offenders over and over. So this has benefits for those students performing better in school, but it also impacts the climate of the school and brings down a disruptive climate. So after Catherine started it, then we hitched Burley Middle School to the program. I told her that if you want to start this program, then you're going to need to bring another school with you. And then last year, Albemarle High School started it, particularly with ninth graders, and Monticello High School started it. This year, we're going to expand it, I know, to Walton Middle School, and I think Sutherland or Henley, one of the other two middle schools, are going to adopt the program.
But why are you adopting middle schools? I think I know the answer, but I just want to bring that into the conversation.
So middle school, in my mind, middle school is where these documented suspensions really start and become impactful. And in elementary school, we typically do not suspend students out of school. In fact, in our policy, if an administrator is going to consider suspending a student up to third grade, they have to contact the central office to explain the situation and, in essence, get permission to do it. So as students get into middle school and they're going through adolescence, they're going through a lot of turmoil in which their prefrontal cortex is like spaghetti. They don't make the best decisions, And so what happens then is if you respond to that with suspensions, you're reinforcing negative behavior by having them out of school. You're setting a neural pathway and also a literal pathway through school where this is what I do. I come to school. If I'm disruptive, I get the attention.
Right. If I don't want to go to school today,
right, then I can misbehave. And I think. The added support and having someone at school that can be there to check in with them and become part of the solution is highly impactful, because then as they go on to high school, they've already laid out a different path and they can sustain that.
Well, Ms. Wells, at elementary school, at what grade is Kale? What grade, first grade or kindergarten through?
We're actually preschool through fifth grade.
And so what happens to children that are have severe misbehaving?
Well, I think it's very similar to what Matt was talking about, in that in school is the place that we want to teach children how to behave in school, how to excel in school. And so it's the same kind of a process. If something happens, we talk about what was the cause, what happened, if they can articulate that. If not, we help them with that. And then we talk about how would you make that right? And then we help and support them through that process.
But you're not going to, if I think I heard that correctly, you're not going to kick somebody out of school.
No.
So what happens to somebody who's having severe misbehavior there?
Mm-hmm. So that's part of first having a relationship with the child, also having a relationship with the family. It's really important for us to partner with the family so that what's happening at home is happening at school. And we talk about what works at home, what behaviors are you seeing at home? Here's what we're seeing at school. How can we work together so that we can teach your child in the best way possible?
And I see that you've added full-time counselors at Kale, or actually you've helped make that happen to all elementary schools, correct?
Well, that was part of the funding request, so I'm glad you brought that up. We did as an approach to social emotional learning and working on these issues that we're talking about. Several of our smaller elementary schools forever have had part-time counselors, so usually half-time. So if a student has a problem Monday, Wednesday, half a day Friday, they can get help, but the other days they can't have a problem.
Sorry, save that. Save that for tomorrow.
That's right. So what we did, our school board, and I should say the school board is really the author of all of this work. We make our pitches, but they have to decide and prioritize what's going to work. So what they supported was having full-time counselors at all the schools, including the small ones. We also have added a mental health counselor to the middle school level as we start to build that program out again. There was a time when we had the Safe Schools Healthy Students Grant when we had a mental health counselor at every middle school. That went away during the Great Recession and the grant sunsetting. We're starting to build that back in again.
11:19 here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call as we talk with our guests, Cindy Wells, who's the new principal at Kale Elementary, Dara Bonham, who will be taking over his first year at Albemarle High School after work at a variety of the high schools here in Albemarle County, and Dr. Matt Haas, the superintendent at Albemarle County Schools. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Thanks, everybody, for staying with us today. Albemarle County Schools and all the new things that are going on in the upcoming school year. For those of us who don't have kids in schools, when are the buses going to be on the roads?
August 21st.
August 21st. You laugh like that's unimportant to me on when I need to learn when
early.
It's going to be.
Well, you should.
Right.
We're starting to pilot stop arm cameras on the school buses this year. We finally have made our headway through the legislature with that. And if a car passes a stop school bus, when that arm swings out, many of them will have cameras on them so that if you pass it, we're going to get a picture of your license plate.
Oh, good, because if I'm making the effort to stop the other dork who's not, good, give him a ticket. Dr. Matt Haas, Cindy Wells, and Dara Bonham in the studio with us today. So we were talking about the STEP program, about helping students, not kicking them out of the school when they're misbehaving, keeping them in. But that sort of made me look at something. Mr. Bonham, new principal at Albemarle High School, I see where you have piloted the anonymous reporting app. Can you tell me about that? Because I wasn't sure exactly what that was and how that worked.
Sure. The county last year was looking at different options, and they'd seen some examples across really the country that allowed not just students, but staff, community members to be able to report things in a fashion that would create some anonymity of things that they may want to report or be concerned about. And I think when you... Well, let me take a step back. So we ended up looking at that as a division. I volunteered to be a pilot at the high school last year at Western, and we did that for, about 6 to 8 weeks. We ended up having that live, and so we went with an app and ended up utilizing that as part of our rollout. And it was interesting because obviously it's designed to get hear voice and voice of, in many cases, those who maybe we don't hear enough from or of, and that would be, in many cases, our students. I think it's always fascinating that things happen. Obviously, when you're, I'll be going into Albemarle High School, which has over 1,950 students, and, just through the course of a day, things just kind of come up because it's all about relationships and so forth, and sometimes things occur, and when they occur, you try to figure out, well, how do you respond to them? Well, you can only respond to them when you know about them. And we do a lot through our systems, through the adults, obviously, in the building to be able to monitor and so forth. But oftentimes, things come up that are concerning to students that they're not necessarily sometimes involved with, almost like that bystander to whatever occurred. And they want to figure out, well, how do I let somebody know that? And sometimes, especially in the high school world, students get apprehensive in terms of wanting to kind of tell on their friends.
You're talking about like bullying kind of
it
stuff?
It could be a range of things. It could be anything that they see. And I always talk about, I think we all have a moral compass. And I think when we feel like something has crossed the line that maybe one of our friends have done or something we see in the classroom or the hallway, we know, firm belief that we know right from wrong, and we see something that crosses a line, we think, that probably wasn't right. And it could be bullying, it could be something they saw in the bathroom, it could be really something they're concerned with one of their friends. Maybe their friend is really stressed out over things going on in their life, and they want to be able to help them. But the interesting thing, and I had a group meeting. I've had these throughout the course of the summer with just different stakeholders in the community, and I was talking to some of the parents about just their experiences, and I asked them the question, how many of you have really kept up with tons of your high school friends now that you're an adult? And the interesting thing is most people will say they have two or three maybe high school friends they've kept up with. However, when you go back and look at high school students and talk to them, their allegiance to each other is so great. In other words, they see their peers as really high up on the priority list in terms of those they want to connect with. They want to make sure they're supporting, but they also don't want to get them in trouble sometimes. And so what happens is they, as they grow up and develop, they get into this little quandary of something goes wrong. Do I really tell anybody? You know, the old story about ratting somebody out, is that a good thing to do or not? And I think when you create different avenues for students and others to be able to share something that also doesn't necessarily put the spotlight on them, but allows others to address, or if nothing else, just to look into, I think that's an important part. And so we always, in all of our schools, look at our climate and what that looks like to be a, you know, a member of that community, especially as a student. And how do you feel as if students have voice and agency? And I think this is just a, one tool that allows for some of those things to be communicated. So some of the adults can, in many cases, look into and hopefully create, you know, some resolution, or at least be able to find out what we can do to help solve some of the concerns our students have.
So how does it work?
So you have the ability for, and we'll have this deployed at all of our schools from elementary up this year in the county, for the ability at each site to either go on the website and just literally click on a link that takes you to the site for that particular school, or you can download it on your app. And then once you pull it up, it's customized to Albemarle County. You indicate the school that you want to represent, and then from there what you'll do is you'll basically talk about what you want to report. And the neat thing is it is 24/7, so it's not something that happens just during the school day. It can happen on a Saturday if something's concerning you that happened previously, or maybe things are going on social media you're concerned about. And then what it allows you to do is to put in a report. Now, you can decide if you want to have anonymity in terms of not being able to report who you are because you just want it out there without identifying yourself, or you can also include your name so you can get some feedback personally from the person who will end up looking at it. So what each school will be designated would have an administrator's responsible for receiving the information. When things come across the different categories for us to sort, some of them do talk about mental health and talk about maybe some things revolving around self-harm. Those will automatically go to some of our counseling leads to allow them to intervene and look at those. And then certainly the administrative team will look at the others and be able to vet the things that we need to follow up on. And I think we would treat it as we would an email, but essentially allows us to hear or know of some of the things that maybe people were concerned about to investigate.
So Dr. Haas passed me his, and it allows the student to go online and anonymously pull up their school and select an incident. Did they see bullying? Are they aware of cyberbullying? Drugs or alcohol on campus, guns or weapon on campus, racial intimidation or harassment, safety concerns, sexual harassment or assault, suicidal thoughts or threats. So I guess, did they see it? Are they aware of a friend who's shared some personal issues, et cetera? And then it gave me the option to remain anonymous or not. I guess because they wouldn't want the principal to then go to that person and say, Rick told me that you said, and then so have that friend go back and I told you that, you know, in confidence.
Right. So it feels as if it's a safer outlet for students and community members to be able to reach out.
Pretty special. Yeah, that's great. 11:30 here on Sunday morning wake-up call with our guest today. That was Dara Bonham telling us about the anonymous reporting app that will be started this year here in Albemarle County, in all the schools, correct?
Correct. That's correct.
That everybody can either use the website or download it to their phone will be given the option to do that. That's pretty special. Great job by our Albemarle County school system. Dara Bonham here, new principal of Albemarle County High School, Albemarle High School, not Albemarle County Schools, Albemarle High School. Cindy Wells, a new principal for the Kale Elementary Colts, and Dr. Matt Haas, superintendent, ready to start his second year. Ms. Wells, I have here that your school is the only school to offer a dual language program.
We are.
Can you tell me about that?
Absolutely. So Kale really has embraced our community in that we have a large number of Spanish speakers in our community. And so the best thing for all children is to be taught in their home language. So we are really able to leverage the assets that our Spanish speakers bring to our school and teach those children literacy in their language. So children are speaking, reading, writing, and listening in Spanish half day. And then the other half of the day, they're speaking, reading, writing, and listening in English. And so we set up our classes that half of them are native Spanish speakers, half of them are native English speakers. And we have that program now from kindergarten all the way through grade five. We have four classes per grade level. So it's two are Spanish-speaking classes and two are English-speaking classes, and they flip-flop and switch. And so it's a fabulous program. We do have a lottery because there is a lot of interest to get into the program. And so, it's a wonderful opportunity to be able to leverage the assets in our community, our children's assets. And then, in this day and age, just knowing one language. Dee Dee Jones, the former principal, would talk about how monolingualism is the new illiteracy. And so how do we leverage that, and we give our children an advantage by fifth grade? They are biliterate, able to read, write, speak, and listen in two languages.
Can I ask what is Albemarle County going to do? And I ask this to all three of you. If we're having to have a lottery system so that everyone, all the students at Kale, can participate in the program, how do we make it possible for all the students to actually participate?
So one of the things I can speak to what we've done at Kale, in addition to the dual language program, we also have FLES program, which is foreign language in the elementary school. So anybody who's not able to get into the dual language program is able to have an opportunity to speak and listen and do a preliminary reading in the second language. And so for that at Kale, it's also Spanish. Previously being the ESOL and World Language Coordinator, we have a number of other elementary schools in Albemarle County that are also implementing FLES, foreign language in the elementary school. So we're working on supporting those schools as they grow that out. Kale started only with FLES and then expanded to the dual language program. So,
all right.
I don't know if you want to add to.
That's correct. So we do have we actually have some staffing in this year's funding request, and we have had over the past several years to increase the number of elementary schools. And so what happens is, and every year we ask, are there one or two schools that want to take this on? Because it's a big commitment. It's not something that you can accomplish without fidelity. So the staff has to buy into it. The community needs to buy into it.
I think
it.
You also have to find the teachers for that program.
Right. So in particular for immersion, you must have, if it's Spanish, then you need teachers who can speak Spanish. Dee Dee has done a terrific job over the years in hiring, making sure that she prioritized hiring teachers who speak Spanish. So Woodbrook Elementary School, for example, has a FLES program. Meriwether Lewis has a program in French. And I think this year we're adding more to Woodbrook, and Murray Elementary School is taking it on.
And Crozet
as well. So it's going to grow over time. I think that one of the things that we need to focus on in K-12 education is using research-based practices and then growing them over time, rather than saying mission accomplished, we're doing this now, so it must be successful, and then trying to move on to the next thing without really reaping the full benefits of what we've committed to.
And can I add on to that? One of the things that we're doing at Kale, in addition, so we don't have some that are in the immersion program and some that aren't, is we're really doing some focusing across the whole school. What are some best practices that transcend whether you're learning English or Spanish? So there's been a real focus on oracy and academic language that we use in our classrooms. It's very different, the day-to-day informal conversations that we have, than the language in a classroom. And so we work with students and with the teachers about what are the sentence frames, what are the ways that we approach an academic discussion. If I want to have a conversation with Dara and we might disagree, there's a way to do that in a classroom that we actually instructionally teach. So that's a way, that's something that we do across the school, and we'll continue to do that moving forward. So,
Dr. Haas, I heard a story on NPR this past week or week before. Is Albemarle County going to add the eSports to the VHSL
program? We will do that. We will add eSports through the Virginia High School League. In fact, out in the schools, there are many clubs already where students are playing and competing in video games. And so that's, I think, how a lot of things grow into the Virginia High School League. They start out as club sports. You have some staff that are interested in sponsoring, and so we will be getting into the eSports program. There are a couple of staff members in our technology department who are getting ready and gearing up to do that.
I heard that not all the schools in the state were going to participate. Only 30, I believe, 30 mm-hmm. some were going to do that. We're going to play three video games. We're going to be part of the competition, mm-hmm. and I wondered if Albemarle County was going to be.
Now, I'm not sure if we'll be doing the kinds of district and regional competitions. Mm-hmm. I do know we've got clubs that are starting to get more invested in it. I think it's really something that you have to have a fair amount of commitment and participation to make that happen.
All right. In the spring, I believe, Albemarle County was on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call talking about your anti-racism policy. Mm-hmm. Can you catch us up to date on that?
So the anti-racism policy, there's a few exciting things that are taking place around that. One is that it's now become it's more of a project. Lots of times policies are passed and they can just sit on a shelf, and then if someone violates them, then we have an issue. But what we decided was to turn it into an overall project, and then that way there are specific actions that need to take place over the next several years to see the policy become reality. One is that one of the parts of the policy is that we would ensure that all educators in Albemarle County schools go through at least a baseline training module for culturally responsive teaching practices. And so we did begin that this summer. We have in the neighborhood of 1,400 teachers, and so far this summer, 800 of our teachers and other educators have gone through the baseline modules for what we call CRT, or culturally responsive teaching practices. And as if they miss it this summer, then when they come back for their pre-service days, they'll go through the training at that time. We hired an additional equity specialist. I know you've met Dr. Hairston before. There are now three equity specialists that work under him. And we did that so that we could expand the training opportunities for our staff and our teaching staff, as well as our support staff. And I think the other piece that's really encouraging about the anti-racism policy is what we call our equity checklist for our policies. It's a list of five things to look at specifically as we work on policies that really impact almost every facet of the school system's operation and ensure that they have a positive impact on equity in our school system.
All right. Again, our guest today, Dr. Matt Haas, he's just finished his first year as superintendent. After how many years as assistant superintendent?
I don't remember. I know this
that's
coming
a lot.
Year, this coming year is my 30th year working in schools. So,
as first year as superintendent, about to start his second at Albemarle County Schools. We also have with us Cindy Wells about to start her first year as the principal at Cale Elementary, and Mr. Dara Bonham about to be the new principal at Albemarle High School. When we come back, some major changes in the works for the high school learning experience. Hang tight, everybody. I have a question, so keep listening. The gifted education program serves about 10% of the Albemarle County schools. And I want to know how that plays a role into the talent that goes out to our county. And you want to change that. Is that correct?
That's correct, Rick. So in talking about the gifted education program, this is another aspect of the tackling equity issues in Albemarle County schools, as well as taking on systemic biases that we talk about in our anti-racism policy. Since its inception in Virginia, the gifted education program is developed around the idea that there are a relative few students in the large pool of students who are what we would say academically gifted. And that model, while it's based on some assessments that the students do, it's also based on work products that they can turn in when they're young, and they go through a fairly rigorous process and decision-making process as to who's gifted and who is not. It's really fraught with issues in my perspective, and I think certainly I'm not alone in that. And our board has had the desire to take this on and begin to change the model so that rather than recognize a few students as academically talented or gifted, and saying that all students have talents that they should be able to pursue in school and have recognized through their own goals, through their own desires, and that we would be here to support them in that. So it's a shift away from saying just some students have talents and gifts, and to saying that all students have talents or what we would say is gifted behaviors that we can foster and encourage so that they can grow those behaviors. And so what we are doing right now is we did have in our funding request, we are hiring, we're bringing on board a specific staff person who will be charged with studying thoroughly the model that we have in place, because we really have a somewhat of a hybrid model. We do have the traditional model of a few students are academically talented, but we call that pull out, where you know we would say, okay, well, Rick Moore is gifted, so a certain number of minutes a day he gets pulled out to explore his academic giftedness, to another model which is more of a push in, where the gifted and talented teacher at the school goes into several classrooms to work with many students in the school to bring about their talents. We want to thoroughly study that model, the impacts that it has, the results that we're getting from it, and then thoughtfully begin to change what we do so we get to what we call a system where all students' talents are recognized and developed.
How is this in any way different from reducing the number of AP classes offered at the high school? Isn't that another program?
I think it all gets back to looking at, you know, individually each student and where their interests happen to lie. You know, with the state making some changes, this cohort of students who are now be rising sophomore, a lot of the state looked at changes in relation to graduation requirements. It eliminates some of the SOLs. But it also took away some of the emphasis, which has always been based on content and looking at the portrait of a graduate, which focused more on who they are, their experiences, some of their passions, some of their pursuits. And so when you look at, I think, all these things, especially as you get through high school, as to what's the menu look like for kids, some of it is the menus kind of look the same for a number of years. You've got these pre-described courses, whether it be honors, AP, dual enrollment, et cetera, that certainly are accelerated and we want kids to be a part of. But we also look at, you know, through the GRT lens, they support independent study, you know, looking at some of the expansions of our Center 1 and Center 2. How do we continue to provide opportunities, some that maybe don't look scripted, just like a particular course would look that maybe you and I would have taken in high school, but look at potentially opportunities that happen to fall. So there is that part where some of the traditional work that's been going on for years will still exist, but also how do we expand essentially the menu for kids to explore, learn a little bit more about themselves, but also explore avenues and pathways that really engage them in the learning. I think that's the other side to it. You can look at plenty of studies that show engagement of young people when they start, especially elementary, to be very high. As they get to high school, it almost feels like their junior and senior years, they're just trying to get through to the next level. How do you make it so you flip that so the engagement level based on things the students are really interested in becomes a part of their high school experience?
If they are identified as gifted and the gifted teacher is coming in to see them rather than them going out to see the teacher, that's the new plan?
So the gifted teachers at the elementary schools that use the model you're describing, they're not going in just to see the quote-unquote gifted child. They're going in to collaborate with the classroom teacher to have strategies for instruction that bring out the talents in all the students and help those students identify them. That's where we're headed. That does take place to some extent, and probably a large extent in our schools now, but it's not what we recognize, and it's certainly not what we're fostering as when you say that 10% of our students are gifted, that's based on IQ, honestly, and right. There really are no instructional strategies to improve IQ. There are instructional strategies to bring out talents for students and develop the skills that they have. So when you talk about IQ, that's more about sorting and selecting students for some characteristic that they already have. And have relatively strongly. What we're trying to do is help students to, across an array of possible talents, understand what their strengths are and then build on them.
If we're taking away AP courses, am I understanding that that's that correctly, that that's what will or might be happening?
So what the looking at the advanced placement courses and some of the other, I guess you might call them strategies that we've had over many, many years now to, they were originally brought on board to challenge students that wanted to go after a higher challenge in the high school level.
The gifted students.
It could be gifted students, but what they've become.
And the gifted parents.
What they've become is they've become a gateway. Many people perceive them as a gateway to getting into college. And so what's happened is the more we offer, the more the students take. And we've done a significant amount of our own internal research with our students and talked to them about these classes, because part and parcel with taking those classes is an unbelievable amount of stress. I think many of us sitting in this room today could not really comprehend the amount of stress that many of our students are under to take these classes so that they can reach this holy grail of getting into college, which as a parent that has a college-age child, and I know there's many parents out there that have had college-age children or go through college, I would have liked for my children who attend Albemarle County Schools to have spent more time exploring what their career interests are, what kinds of things that they want to do as their first occupation. You know, my daughter the other day just landed her first real job, which is at Bodo's. And they're a great employer. And she's already learning a lot of the skills that, unfortunately, as a rising junior in high school, she hasn't learned. And I think that one of the things that we're shifting our focus is to say, academics are important. You know, everybody needs foundational knowledge to be to really be a contributing member of society and have an intelligent conversation and just be part of the play that, that we have. But at the same time, students are much more satisfied when they can learn skills, they can see them develop, they use real-world tools and authentic experiences, and then have that first occupation as a senior in high school where they're doing an internship or having their first job experience that leads them to the next step in life, which we have nationally 50 to 55% of students that go to college from high school do not finish college in 4 years. There's many reasons for that, and there's also crushing debt associated with that. And so we really need to do something to address that. At the same time, there are tens of thousands of middle skill jobs that go unfilled in Virginia that are technology related, where a student doesn't necessarily need a specific credential to begin that career. We're having trouble filling our ranks of teachers and support staff. There are many, many jobs that can be fulfilling and can be that first step in life for the high school graduate. And I think that's where we need to focus our energy. College is there. It's important. However, I don't think that should be the goal of high school, strictly to prepare students for the next academic step that they could take.
What? How do you, and I don't want to spend too much time on this particular topic, but how? What happens in this? Because an AP course gets extra points in the overall
GPA.
In the GPA.
Yeah, so that's the GPA. The other part. So how do you do something when you're applying to Stanford or whatever, and you're comparing it to someone else in another school system who did get that?
Well, then, first of all, Stanford, nor does any other college, compare students from different schools. Students, when they apply to attend UVA or any of the other schools, they're only compared to students in their own school because there's an enormous disparity around the nation as to what students can take and what they can't take. I myself was a principal of a high school in Southwest Virginia where there were no AP classes, and yet students were still going on to college at various universities. So you only get compared on the program that you could take at your high school. We're also in the process of eliminating any weighted grades in our system so that students strictly earn a GPA. What we're trying to do is encourage students. One of our board priorities is to ensure that students have an atmosphere where they can pursue their personal interests. When we survey students, when we talk to them, they're not taking AP classes to the extent that they're taking them because they're interested in all those classes. They're taking one or two of them because they're interested, but then they add in several others because there's a perceived advantage in taking those classes. We've done our own research. We have a research firm that's looked into this for us, and we are on the cutting edge of school systems around the country that are beginning to scale back not the AP offerings, but the amount of AP classes that students can take each year. But don't forget, Rick, we also have dual enrollment classes that are actual college classes that are offered through Piedmont Virginia Community College. And so students can get that college experience without the test prep, which is really what, in my mind, and I'm not just in my mind, but what we know, advanced placement classes are really about covering content to get ready for a test. And if you know any students that have been through these programs recently, if they're not passionate about the subject area, it is incredibly stressful. Students can handle stress, hard work, but when they're not sure why they're taking it, that's not good for their mental health.
Just a few minutes left in today's show with Mr. Dara Bonham from Albemarle High School, Cindy Wells from Cale Elementary, and Dr. Matt Haas, the superintendent of Albemarle County Schools. Dr. Haas, you wrote a piece in the recent release for the budget, I guess. I'm not sure. Phil gave me this. Today's workplace looks nothing like it did in 1950, and neither should our schools. I thought that was really nice. I'm curious about the, and said, rising tide lifts all boats was another piece I clipped from that. Classrooms populated by desks all in a row, filled with furious note takers, and a leaning learning environment, valuing routine all over spontaneity. I'm curious about, from the three of you, each of your strategic plan for the upcoming year. And we'll do ladies first, and we'll let Dr. Haas finish.
Well, thank you. I'm very excited to be able to partner with a fabulous administrative team and families and students in our schools. So my first priority is to just listen and get to know the things that people really love about Kale and want to continue and develop those partnerships. So I feel like that's the best first step for us at Kale Elementary.
Yeah, and I would echo with what Cindy's doing at Kale. I think we're all, especially going to a new building, you want to listen and you want to find out what's kind of going on from all your constituents and stakeholders. But I think also, too, it's important that we can all look at subjective information, but to really get to the objective side of where you want to go is to look at data. And I think you have to look at data from all, you know, different forms, whether it happens to be climate data, student performance data, and see what does that data tell you in terms of initiatives. I'm also a firm believer, and I've said this to the staff already at Albemarle, that you don't want to be the jack of all trades, master of none. You want to somewhat define and dominate. So if you find two or three things you really want to put your emphasis on, and that will be our goal as we head into the school year, is defining what are those areas based on the tangible results we have from years past that we want to focus on going into this year that obviously helps with student engagement and learning.
Do you have how many assistant principals do you have?
Four.
Four?
Four at Albemarle, yes.
Goodness gracious, you have your
feet up. Big school.
Yeah. Do you focus on, what is your personal focus?
Mm-hmm. Our first focus,
focus.
Well,
what is your
my focus
your
becomes
piece?
Our focus, because I think that's the lens I have to look through, and that really is starting off with getting us all together as a staff. We have close to 200 faculty and staff at the school. Easily you can see people walking through the halls that maybe you haven't seen or maybe you recognize, you don't know from the last several years. Our goal, first of all, is really for all of us, me personally, is to get to know all of the staff members, to build relationships and understand who we are and develop the structures that allow that to be consistent through the course of the year. Because if you can't work together, then you won't be able to figure out how you accomplish your goals individually with your kids. So the first task really is to define ourselves as what it means to be a patriot and have the energy and enthusiasm and to be ready for when kids get back.
Thank you. Dr. Haas?
So there's a lot of strategy around our plans, I'll say that. However, the main thing is high-quality teaching and learning and working together to accomplish that.
All right. I'm impressed by everything that is on the plan for this year. There's so much work to be done after so much that was accomplished this past year, and so much material that we just divvied across in the hour that we just never got into much depth. I wish we could have picked one or two topics, but I got sent this huge email that please touch on this and touch on this and touch on this. And there's no way to do all that except to jump across it like lily pads, and I'm a huge dude. Please come back in the future where we can spend time and dig at it with a shovel, please. Again, our guest, Dr. Matt Haas, a superintendent to start his second year, Miss Cindy Wells, the new principal of the Kale Colts, and Mr. Dara Bonham, about to start his year at Albemarle High School. And good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rick.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Strength is in their fuel. Engineering assistance is from Mike Friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SevillePodcast.com. Be sure and join Rick next Sunday morning for another edition of The Wake-Up Call, only on 94.7 WPVC. We'll